It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Well, The Citizen Lobbyist has been now doing her work for, I've lost track of the time. Well, here she is. Good morning, Citizen Lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike.
So, how many years have we been doing this? Do you have some?
God, have you figured out the math and you're going to tell me?
I'm going to go back and do it because I don't want to just guess. But it's been a wonderful time, and I look forward to today as well.
Well, let's guess before you do the math. I'm thinking at least 8 years, maybe nine.
Yeah.
At least eight.
I would say that's probably true, and I will go back and look at the record to see if that is what it is. So here we are with this week, and shall we begin with the special meeting the Assembly did, or where would you like to begin?
Sure. I think we had two special meetings. You had the City of Palmer meeting, and I went to the Matanuska Citizen and Borough Assembly meeting, which was a special meeting called together for one purpose: to discuss the impacts of the governor's proposed state budget.
Right.
And all the assembly members were there. In fact, a lobbyist, hired lobbyist Don Harris, was on the phone, although he didn't really speak. And they had some really good handouts, Mike, that I would really recommend people go download the packet, because I think there's some really good insight. There's a regional assessment of government finances and employment, which is specific to the borough, which is kind of hard to drill down those numbers sometimes. There's the school district presentation, the borough attorney's presentation, sort of a PR piece that Governor Dunleavy's office has done on a proposed 2020 budget, and the impact to the borough of the budget. So all those are online, so I won't go in too much detail about them, Mike. It did start out by the manager just saying that, you know, nothing is sacred in this budget, that it's going to take some proactivity on the part of the borough and a measured approach, and that was why he was wanting to have the meeting. He has been in contact with the Alaska Municipal League, AML, and they've all pretty much determined they aren't going to know results very soon. It's going to put them in an awkward position of having to pass a budget that they don't know, may not know what their resources are because of the timing of when property tax bills go out and that sort of thing. You know, school districts always in that position, Mike, because they have to always pass theirs on the information that they have, and not having what the borough is going to contribute, nor what the state is, although they thought they put some certainty in that last year, but everything's kind of changing now. The manager did say that they are planning on some vetoes after the budget's passed. So they, you know, are going to have to go in with the approach of that expectation. His big concern is that the Matanuska Borough is going to be hit really hard with one proposal in the governor's budget, and that's to do with bonding. And if you remember, Mike, in 2011, voters passed a $214 million school bond to build five new schools.
Right.
Ironically, Governor Dunleavy was on the school board at that point, and he was a yes vote, and they passed the resolution to do it before the borough did. He was a deciding yes vote, I think.
Right.
And what it entailed was kind of a contract between the borough and the state, saying that the state would pick up 70% of the cost of building the five schools, and the borough residents would pick up 30%. And it was amortized over so many years. Well, we have 17 more years to pay for that. And at this point, I think around $65 million is left or so. And if that holds, Governor Dunleavy wants to do away with that program, do away with that promise, then the borough will have to absorb that, and that's going to be a serious problem that they're not quite sure what to do. They're limited to what they can do. There is a tax cap, although there are some wordings in there because of these type of situations to raise the tax cap. But that and a grant for the Deepwater Port is got 4 or 5 more years on it. And he was just acknowledging that there's going to have to be some changes, that the money will have to come up from taxpayers. And we're in a unique situation in that we have a really small commercial tax base, unlike Anchorage. And so it kind of falls on the shoulders of property owners there.
Now, just recently, AML had a gathering of people in Juneau, and I think members of the assembly and administration of the borough were down there. So the information they're getting should probably have been coming from a variety of sources, face-to-face conversations, et cetera, not just reading about a proposed budget.
Yeah, that's really true. The next presentation came from the borough attorney, and he wanted to just go over what the school of responsibility was and what the legislation, the proposal was of the state aid. You know, it's 400 lines of text. It has to do with formula funding. It's not easily explained, but I think Nick did a really good job taking a really hard subject and explaining it and also providing a really good handout for that. So it all hinges on the fact, Mike, and we hear this a lot, that all of these agreements with the state, so to speak, have in them a clause that says may be appropriated annually by the legislature. And that's the escape hatch that Governor Dunleavy is looking at to turn off the funding for it. And he went into all kinds of little caveats about it being equally applied. He talked about the Ketchikan lawsuit last year and how that actually doesn't really have an effect, but he explained it anyway. He talked about further or previous decisions on some type these type of things and just kind of a position that they might be in had if this does go through. But really a really good presentation. One thing I didn't know, Mike, is at the time, I don't think it was the school bond, but right after the school bond, a couple of years after, we passed a road bond. And in that case, I think it was a 50-50 split. I don't remember if it was 70-30 or 50-50 with the state. But they paid that money all up front.
Oh, so you mean the state did it?
Yeah, the borough got that $38 million right away. That's why they got done so quickly, because we're still paying our part on that. But the state has already paid their part up front, as they didn't do that with school bonds. So
okay.
The road bonds are not part of this payback, clawback mechanism. It's just a school bond. So that was kind of new information to me. They also had a really good, as usual, a good presentation by school superintendent Monica Goya. And she started out by saying, and I think this is really tactful on her point, that we hear a lot about poor performance and that the schools, we don't get what our money pays for, and it's kind of a nice soundbite, but it just isn't proved out. There is one test that they base that on that the borough doesn't do so well on, but she gave evidence of another one, the ACT, which is a national test that juniors take. 3/4 of our juniors took that test, and we actually scored above the state and the nation in what ACTs usually our juniors really score at. So that was pretty significant. And they did a really good job of turning people out and getting some assistance for those the cost of those tests. But a bottom line is our Math 2 students outperformed in both math and reading. They're a little below in English, but not it's not the doomsday that it's been made out to be. And they do have a graduation rate of 86%. So it was good to hear her say that. And she talked about the reduction, of course, and what it meant across the board. Charter schools, you know, they don't have the support personnel to get rid of. And they estimated that it could mean as many as 4 teachers being gone at Midnight Sun. So, you know, a lot of it is, you know, other personnel, librarians, nurses, all those other people that kind of make everything go. And then probably most importantly to most people is the fact that class sizes. We already have the highest class sizes in the whole state, and that ratio is undoubtedly going to go up if they have to eliminate teachers. So there was a little comment about the Houston Middle School and where we were on that. They're still about a month out from knowing whether that's a tear down or a rebuild. There is some insurance money, also some FEMA money. They don't seem too concerned about the reimbursement for that, although, you know, until we know, we don't know. They've already spent about $2 million. That's at the front is their per pupil monies from the state that they're really most worried about.
So in addition to the presentations by the attorney and the superintendent, the manager, et cetera, was there opportunity for the assembly members to discuss or comment about what they saw or how they felt about it?
So, you know, it was pretty short and sweet. They did have comments at the end. Member Jesse Sumner said that he endorses the governor's budget, except for the bond part. He thought that was pretty unfair, but the rest of it, he thinks that they may have to raise revenues. And I hope that he knows that means the only real road for that is increase in property tax, which he doesn't seem very...
Right. That'll be an interesting discussion.
Right. Of course, he's been actually very leaning pretty forward on raising a lot of fees. I know he has been standing firm on some pool fees and some user fees that are coming up. So he kind of came out frontward on that one. Jim Sykes made some comments about, you know, the school debt. And, again, most everybody's concerned about those bond obligations, I think. He was glad that they had had the meeting. He thought that they needed to all start this conversation and that, you know, he thought we probably needed a combination of both some efficiency cuts and also some revenue changes. He said it's kind of a chess game in Juneau, and that's exactly what it is. George McKee, on the other hand, didn't understand why they were having the meeting. He says it was just to raise the blood pressure of the community. They won't. They have to have a budget by July 1st. And he said he also mentioned that they may have to raise revenues, which again is not usually in his dialogue. Everybody seemed to be pretty much in unison of saying there's going to have to be a combination of something to get through this. And I think most people, bulk of the assembly, Tinlin, are also chiming in saying that they were glad that they had started the conversation and that the manager is filling us in. He's concerned also about the road bond or the school bonds, of course, and you know, having more of a conversation about their core functions and how they're going to fund them. And he doesn't think there needs to be any cuts at this time, but you know, we need to make, you know, keep some limits on things as we go forward. So, sure. You know, that was kind of it. You know, I think that Vern Halter, you know, felt that he thought that he was also very upset about reneging on the school bonds. He, you know, reminded us we've all had tough times before. You know, they have a job to do. They have to do it by ordinance. It has to be passed when it has to be passed, and they'll do it with the, you know, information that they have. But I don't think anybody is planning on keeping their foot off the gas with the state legislature to get a more fair budget to the communities.
Right.
So that was kind of it, Mike.
So this is a special meeting. They're going to be meeting again in a regular
Tuesday.
Meeting. Yeah, coming on up and get down to...
Can we screen that meeting, Mike?
Yes.
I think it's really worth listening to. I'm not sure if you have it up yet, but I'm sure it will be soon. And it was short. I think I was out of there by, I don't know, 7:30 or so.
I did put it up. If you go to RadioFreePalmer.org, our listeners go there, they'll be able to listen to it. It was a pretty short but focused, important meeting. Joe Moore did that work.
Very focused.
Yeah, very good.
Yep.
Of course, let's back up a few days. There was the meeting that happened over at school toward Wasilla and Frontieris, which was an opportunity for for people, and many people took advantage of that opportunity because the Valley delegation was arrayed there at a table, and for a few hours, people spoke and shared their opinion about what they saw in the governor's budget. It was a I was there for a short time. Lee was there for a longer period of time. I've talked to some people there for the entire time. And it was it appeared, on various estimates, probably 300 people were there. The sense I had was that, as reported in about the Eagle River and Anchorage meetings that occurred, there seemed to be a lot of people out, and the majority seemed to raise questions about varying aspects of the governor's proposal. There may have been some people in support, but I think it's safe to say that most people were questioning aspects in a somewhat similar way that we have been following on gavel to gavel, as both the Senate, Alaska Senate, and Alaska House, finance committees in particular, have been questioning the OMB representatives about the numbers. I think the situation is summed up by a statement ascribed to the governor that this was a math problem that had to be solved first before we went on to do the rest of it. And I think the missing understanding, perhaps, or the decision, is that it doesn't matter that educational institutions, K-12, university, the borough, are in the process of creating something for next year, and without some sense of certainty, you can't do that. And so what the idea that it has to be done all at once and cause the real confusion, turbulence, is one that's being looked at and said, well, you know, the destruction that comes from that to systems isn't going to leave you with a clean slate, but a lot of people that are literally going to lose their jobs or not have opportunities because there won't be educational programs. One last question about the borough assembly. I heard the next day of some people being furloughed as part of the borough's process at the present time in reaction to the proposed budget. Was there any discussion at that meeting about the way in which the borough would be reducing its travel or hiring or even furloughing people?
Yeah, I didn't hear any specifics on furloughing. They did talk about having sort of a traveling freeze and that sort of thing. It may be that they're not replacing people. You know, for instance, they're down a couple of planners now, I think. And I think they will probably put off those hires because of that. Superintendent Goya said a really interesting thing. She said she thought it was disingenuous to say that they were having a freeze, because there's just some positions, special education teachers, some positions that you just can't not fill and just wait till this chess game, so to speak, gets worked out. But they are definitely, you know, watching that, not putting on any extra personnel that they might have to let go. But I didn't hear anything specifically, Mike, about anybody being particularly furloughed. Now, they did talk about not taking on any contracts or consults. And that is a big deal because, you know, if you're in the middle of and I don't know where we're at right now with, you know, having a community impact plan, or your consult on a building project. And if they're going to say no consults, that could be affected. But I haven't heard specifically any hiring cutbacks. I just don't know that they're going to have anywhere to go with the borough with that. They don't.
We'll follow up a little bit. But I know in at least one instance an individual was furloughed, and that's why I brought that up. But on the other hand,
I know that they're presenting the budget a little differently this year. It sounds like they're going to, instead of usually they have the departments present and then they kind of give the budget at the same time. Sounds like the manager may be giving the borough the budget or giving the assembly the budget first and then have the departments come in and defend what's there. I think John Duffy used to do it that way maybe years ago, too. But that scene shook up. But, I have not heard any specific amounts of people being furloughed. And I'd be curious to know if that's somebody recently hired, you know, under that, you know, 30 days you can just walk or what it is. But they're definitely going to feel the impact, as is small communities.
Right. Well, let me just touch upon the Palmer City Council meeting. It was a regular city council meeting, also very quick, about an hour. And they honored the Palmer High School hockey team, which had a very successful season. But the piece that was interesting was that there were a couple people from Palmer High School, one the school safety officer and another administrator, who came to talk a little bit about their program and to assure people that it was, one, successful. There have been some talk about people who found it not to be a comfortable thing to have a school safety officer there. The assurances were given to the council that this seemed to be working well. I think the larger discussion about crime and that both at the legislative level as well as locally has risen the level of interest. And, of course, that action was taken some time ago to provide school safety officers, which have been in other schools. And I don't think it's to be taken as meaning that there's a need to police the schools so much as to provide a resource. And that seems to be happening. Now, I want to quickly segue, though, to the event that happened yesterday at the Palmer Depot. The Palmer Police Department sponsored a community meeting to look at both a neighborhood and business watch program. Now, these programs have been in existence in the past here in Palmer, and they exist in other places. And Police Chief Lance Ketterling gave an overview to about 30 people that came out. They represented business owners, citizens, a variety of different people. And he pointed out that Palmer was not in the grips of a crime wave. There had been some this past year some areas that have risen, particularly auto thefts, and there's a whole variety of other things that are going on. But I think he was able to describe the situation so the people understood this. But more importantly, what was being provided was a suggestion that local neighborhoods have the opportunity to gather together, not to be vigilantes, but to be vigilant and also, most importantly, to get to know one another. Sometimes people are in their houses. They may know their neighbor next door, but there's some suggestion there's a value in having a gathering that is somewhat informal. Doesn't require you to sign off on a long list of requirements of what you would do, but it would mean that if you do know one another, and you can help one another in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And
look out for each other.
Yeah, and there were some questions asked and specific examples given regarding the idea of homelessness, of people wandering about. And I think the important point was made that being homeless is not a crime. But there are important things that an individual can do. If you have a business or you have property and people would want to camp on your property one way or another. But I think he did a good job. The questions back and forth were, I think, instructive. Most importantly, we were there. And we did a recording. I'll be putting up the audio a little bit later today.
Okay.
But we also streamed the video. And that video is available, as we speak, on our website, radiofreepalmer.org. So for those people who did not have an opportunity to be there, the city council had asked that we do that because there were some council members. The mayor was there, the manager was there, and a couple of council members, but not all. And this would give people an opportunity to take a look. And here's a pretty good description of something that individuals, if they choose, can do. So,
yeah, another thing to bring on that same note, if you're keeping your eye on what's going on in the state, too, I noticed that State Affairs tonight at State Judiciary, which I believe Senator Hughes may be the one co-chair or chair of that, is talking about having public comment tonight for the two bills, SB 12 and SB 35. SB 12 is sex offenses, and the other one is it's both having to do with parole and sentencing for sex crimes. And so I still see that on the schedule. There was some talk they were going to cancel it and redo it, but it could be that you'll be your opportunity if you feel strongly about those things or just want to listen in on gavel to gavel. My guess is it'll probably be online, but you have a chance to weigh in. So if you,
good,
it's on the leg, akleg.gov website.
Okay. Well, thank you, Citizen Lobbyist. I think we covered quite a ground. I look forward to talking to you next week. And it's easier to stay warm. It's going to be warm today.
Yeah. Another sunshiny day. We'll take it.
All right. Take care now. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.